He says that law has never lived up to its full potential. It was supposed to apply to convicted felons, drug abusers, and the mentally ill, among others. Then the Brady Bill, which was adopted in 1993, that was intended to enforce the earlier law by creating a national background check system. But that system is flawed because it doesn't have records on millions of people who should be disqualified from buying or possessing guns. 10 states have not submitted any mental health records to the background check system. 18 states have provided fewer than 100 mental health records. Fewer than 100. And that's according to Mayors Against Illegal Guns, which is a group that Bloomberg helped to found. The time has clearly come to fulfill the intent of the 1968 law and the Brady Bill by creating a genuine, credible background check system for the sale of firearms. I don't understand any opposition to this kind of common sense thing. It's not the Gestapo coming and taking away guns or making things illegal. And you can still have some of the crazy laws that they have in some states, as long as they stay in those states where you can, you know, walk into a bar with your hidden weapon on you. I mean, if that means so much to you, okay, you know, do that in Arizona or something like that. But here in New York, we don't want that, right?
Yeah, and maybe we'd like a little more accountability and responsibility if people are so responsible as gun owners.
There were also some letters in New York Times I like to look at about this particular subject, about the focus on guns after Tucson. This letter comes from Peter Spalding, who says, "I spent more than 30 years in the Foreign Service. I recall being asked on more than one occasion how it could be that handguns in the United States are easier to obtain than a driver's license. Many of our overseas friends feel that we reap what we sow by our lax gun laws. I hear President Obama's plea for civility. From now on, I will no longer refer to those who oppose gun control as gun nuts. I will refer to these people as my misguided brothers and sisters and hope that we can engage in a civil debate on the need to ban assault weapons." Fair?
Not sure.
Yeah. I mean, I can't think of any possible use for assault weapons other than assault. They are called assault weapons,
and
after all.
An assault weapon is not a handgun.
Well, no, that's true. And
an assault weapon is like an assault rifle.
Right.
You know, there was the whole pre-ban, you know, rifle thing back, you know, a couple of years ago.
Mm-hmm.
Whether a rifle was pre-ban or post-ban and all of that. And let me tell you, you can get a lot of accessories for those rifles. So, yeah, I don't know.
I have another suggestion. This is from Caroline Herzenberg of Chicago. Gun insurance. Mandatory liability insurance for gun owners sounds to me like an idea whose time has come. With this approach, we can respect what many interpret as a constitutional right to bear arms, while at the same time making those who possess and use weapons pay for the risk that they pose to the rest of us. Again, I don't see any reason to oppose that. You get to keep your guns, and you take some responsibility for either your actions or the actions of those that you give access to your weaponry. Here's a letter from Wendy Perrone of New York. It seems to me the most logical extension of the idea of gun regulations would be to require a license similar to a driver's license for which you would have to take a test. It would test the applicant's psychological soundness and anger management abilities. It seems to me that hunters in the National Rifle Association should not object to such a requirement. After all, in Canada, where guns are plentiful, a safety course is required before you can purchase a gun. And you have so much less in the way of violent crime there. Very interesting. Let's see. Nicholas Christoph attacked my research. This is a letter from... where's his name? Okay, John R. Lott Jr. I'm sorry, I got merged into the paragraph before. John R. Lott Jr. of Alexandria, Virginia, the author of More Guns, Less Crime. Nicholas Christoph attacked my research in his January 13th column while conceding that concealed weapons didn't lead to the bloodbath that liberals had forecast. Mr. Christoph asserted that many studies have now debunked my finding that more guns lead to less crime. It's quite a finding, isn't it? In fact, the overwhelming majority of studies support my results. Among peer-reviewed studies in academic journals by criminologists and economists, 18 studies examining national data find that right-to-carry laws reduce violent crime to indicate no discernible effect, and none find a bad effect from the law. I'm sorry, 10 indicate no discernible effect. None find a bad effect from the law. Among non-refereed studies, 3 find drops in crime, and 2 say either no effect or possibly small increases in crime. Mr. Kristof cites a public health professor's suggestions for one gun a month sales limits, gun sales, and further background checks, but I know of no academic criminologist or economist who have found that these laws reduce any type of violent crime. No gun ban has reduced murder rates. I don't know how you can make that kind of conclusion. How do you know what a regulation or some kind of background check, what kind of effect that has on how many murders there aren't? You can't really measure violent crime that doesn't happen. You know, it's difficult.
And I don't know. Banning's kind of a harsh word. I don't think that's.
And I don't think anybody said that. I don't think anyone said ban.
Saying we need to ban weapons, we need to ban guns.
The only people saying gun bans are the people that are in favor of guns because they want to scare people into thinking that that's what's going to happen if they don't follow everything they say.
Right. That elicits more support and stuff like that. But really, these people should be coming up with some creative ideas on how. People that are unarmed and that do not carry weapons can live comfortably, because to me it's just discomfort. I don't want to be around people that have guns, whether they're responsible or not, especially if they're not. But, you know.
Yeah, it seems to me that you should have a right not to have to go through that. I mean, doesn't that count for anything?
Yeah, and I think this is what we've been saying, you know, for the last couple of weeks with this topic, you know. And, I mean, even, you know, being around police or, you know, even in other countries, you know, we get a little startled when we see, you know, police or military types walking around, like, in Frankfurt in Germany or in Paris.
I mean, you can talk about my reaction to that. I did not take that very well. Walking around in Gare du Nord and suddenly almost bumping into soldiers with machine guns.
We went up to an above ground, like, mezzanine at the top of Gare du Nord, and you were behind me on the stairs, and I was walking up the stairs, and I walked right into three military guys with, you know, military-issue rifles, like, for combat, and they're walking. They do their sort of casual saunter everywhere in the station. And they were coming down from where you would buy tickets for TGV from the SNCF, which is the rail company that runs TGV. And they're walking down. There's also a little cafe up there. And we did an about-face. I mean, you just went right down the stairs. And I was walking towards them, and they were starting to check me out. And I turned right around. And I was afraid that just doing that would set them off, you know, or make them at least, you know, walk up and tap me on the shoulder or chase me and grab my shoulder, something like that. I mean, I really didn't like having to react, but you reacted so violently, not violently, but yeah. you were so adamant that we turn around that I had to do an about face, and I just felt a little bit like, this is too much movement. Now I'm suspicious, and they're the ones with the big guns. Is this really preventing anything?
There's some things I just don't react well to, and a bunch of armed people, that's one of them, so I just had to get out of there as quickly as possible.
And then the next day, we went up and I actually sat at the cafe, because it's a good vantage point. You can watch the entire station, and I noticed that one of the signs right by the entrance to the ticket area for the TGV, right where these guys had been walking around the corner coming down the stairs, there are signs, no knives, no guns, you know, no smoking, you know, one of those signs with all the things you can't do. And it would have been a great photo. I mean, these three military guys walking down the stairs with a sign that says no guns in the background. But you have to deal with that, you know, because in that country and in a lot of countries, that's the way of keeping things safe, keeping order.
We have to deal with that when we're there because that's their way. We do not have to deal with that here because we determine our way here.
Right.
And I'll be damned if I'm going to tolerate people walking around like that in Penn Station or in a subway system or in the streets of New York.
Yeah, I mean, if we have military guys, we have the National Guard walking around with assault rifles because we had all decided, big quotations, quotes, that was the way to keep things safe. You know, people would be up in arms. Ugh, this is terrible. What is with all the puns going on?
Yeah, a lot
of
puns. A lot of puns in
people
the
people would be really upset if you had military types with big guns walking around the states. And you know what? I don't feel, and we don't have that. So why am I supposed to feel okay? Maybe even in rural parts of the country. I mean, yeah, New York's a big city, but I'm from Seattle. I'm from Washington, and you know, you can walk around with a gun in the city of Seattle, in King County, and you can walk around any part of the state with a gun. And there's a lot of states like that have big cities, yes, but they have very lax or very, like, sort of country gun laws, which, you know, is the pride and joy, I guess, of people, you know, people in America, you know, with the Second Amendment and all. But, you know, big cities like New York and Chicago are sort of alone in that, having these bans and not having people be allowed to have weapons. So I don't think any people in authority should be allowed this, and I don't think people that that are just citizens should be allowed this. And of course, it is not allowed in a big city like New York, but there's plenty of other places in the country where, you know, it's tolerated. And I don't want to see more tolerance for this. I want to see some advocacy and some representation on my behalf as someone who does walk around unarmed.
Right, right. Absolutely. Here's one last letter from the New York Times on this subject. From Robert Nussbaum of Fort Lee, New Jersey. I just think these letters are rather interesting as far as what they say and the viewpoints they espouse. The show must go on. The annual SHOT Show in Las Vegas, that is. Is there no more jarring juxtaposition than the January 20th news article, Giffords set for transfer to rehabilitation center, with an accompanying... excuse me. You've got the same cough as me, don't you?
That's because I've been around you for a little bit.
I think it's all the puns in the air.
Yeah, I think it is all the puns. It's getting a little dry.
An accompanying photo of tributes to the congresswoman above a photo of an array of weapons at the gun show. The most distressing aspect is that there is not even a pretense that the recent events in Tucson give the gun lovers and lobbyists pause for reflection. The party line is that the fault lies not in our guns, but in our mental health care system. When the best we have to hope for is for the most limited of conversations on the size of the magazine, not the scope of the arsenal, it is clear that the only lesson learned from this tragedy is that there are few, if any, lessons learned. And, yeah, I got to say, you know, you can't say there's no relation between the overall mood in the country or in a particular state and the crazy actions of some people. You can't blame it all on this guy. It's just nuts from the start. People get steered in a certain direction by what's around them. We saw this right here on Long Island in Patchogue with the murder of the Ecuadorian immigrant by a bunch of teenagers that were all riled up about foreigners taking jobs or people from Central and South America.
Yeah, nature versus nurture. You know, how are we taking care of people, and what kind of culture are we breeding out there? You know, what is the norm? And I think, you know, people really need to set an example, no matter where you are on the spectrum, and really raise the young people around you.
And, you know, I bring this case up as just an example of how the tone is set by people in authority, people in the media. And no, it's not always about guns, because this guy wasn't killed by a gun. He was stabbed. There are different ways you can do things like that. But imagine somebody being completely fed up with a machine gun and find himself in a crowd of people from Central or South America. Who knows what could happen? That's the kind of thing that you hear about all the time. You hear about people just losing it and firing at will into crowds of people. This kind of thing can be avoided with adequate training, background checks, and some mental health education. But there's only so much you can do as far as watching over people.
Right.
We talked about this last week a little, that there are lots of people out there that you would consider to be a little nuts, that you wouldn't want to see carrying a gun.
Right.
But they have, quote unquote, the constitutional right to do just that.
And they're free to be nuts.
You can't stop them until they actually do something, and then it's too late. So obviously, it's not the mental health system that's at fault here. There's something else.
Not necessarily, but I think that there could be, that letter speaks to something. I think that there could be more support. And these things are all related. Everything is connected. Everything is related. These topics, they go hand in hand in a lot of ways. And I think there needs to be a lot of, the whole health debate, that's a whole nother, set of shows, you know, that we could go on and on and on and on and on and have in the past. And I think that, you know, really what it's about is the community and taking care of people. And, that letter speaks to it. I think that there is that attribute of mental health, but it's the entirety of it. I mean, you know, just having more health care or more support for people that lose jobs and they're disgruntled or their education. You know, there's another thing, education. How do people get educated? How are they prepared for real life and society and being an adult and that kind of thing? That's another set of issues that I think is very closely related. But it's the entirety of it that I think you'll really find the solution, and the discourse and people talking about it and being open and honest.
Let's go into delay, because I imagine there are callers out there that want to call us. And we're going to take phone calls in just a couple of minutes. But I'd like to go into delay first just to get it over with, because it can be kind of painful sometimes. Once we do that, I'm going to read a couple of letters from our listeners who can write to us at otw@2600.com. And our phone number is 631-632-9872. We'll take phone calls in about 5 minutes or so. In the meantime, here's somebody to get us into delay land.
Hi, this is Yakov Smirnov, a Russian comedian, and I'm glad to be listening to WUSV instead of the KGB.
And here we are in Delay Land. And boy, that was better than it usually is. Hold on, I don't think Kyle made it yet.
Did we make? Am I here?
Okay,
did
I think. Make it? Okay, yeah, you're here. You're here.
How'd you get here faster than me?
Well, I was pressing the buttons and you were kind of lagging behind. You see, there's your shadow over there. You can see.
Yeah. It's coming through.
All right. Yeah, we're all here.
Okay.
All right. A little distorted though. Can we tone down the distortion just a little bit? Okay. Good.
I'd love some good calls though.
Good calls are always better than bad calls. Okay, so here we have some letters from our listeners. OTW@2600.com. This is from Botrax. He sends in an article and says this is a good use for a gun, a deterrent. Store owner stops robbery with gun, then gives would-be thief food and $40. This actually happened in Long Island a year ago last summer, June 3rd, 2009. Listen to this story. A rifle-toting convenience store owner said he decided to show mercy on a would-be robber after seeing the man collapse into tears and claim he was only committing the crime to support his starving family. The Long Island store owner provided the bat-wielding man with $40 and a loaf of bread and made him promise never to rob again. This was a grown man crying like a baby. Mohammed Sahail, owner of the Shirley Express convenience store, told the Associated Press in an interview, the man dropped the bat, picked up the bread, and tucked the $40 into his waistband before fleeing. Sahal, who moved to the United States from Pakistan about 20 years ago, said he was getting ready to close his store shortly after midnight on May 21st, 2009, when the man in his 40s entered with a bat in his hand. Sahal said he tried to stall for a moment and then grabbed a rifle he keeps behind the counter and ordered the assailant to drop the bat. Well, okay, first of all, a sad postscript to this story. I heard this several weeks ago that the owner of that convenience store has since died of, I'm not sure exactly of what, but nothing related to his store or to this incident, but just a sad footnote to that. But it showed how somebody can show compassion in a situation like that. But in regards to the gun argument, this guy came in with a bat, and so the store owner picked up a rifle and ordered him to drop the bat. Rifle beats bat, okay? There's no question about that. And in this particular case, yes, it did serve him well. Would he have done that if the guy had come in holding an Uzi or something of that nature? Don't think so, which means that the only way to combat that is to be better armed than the Uzi, and it just turns into this personal arms race all over again.
A missile,
yeah, some kind of heat-sinking missile. Shoulder-mounted
missile.
In that particular case, it did work. Because you have a situation where somebody isn't armed. But when somebody else is armed, doesn't work as well. Really doesn't. In fact, a bat might be a better defense against somebody with a gun because you can catch him by surprise from behind or something. I don't know.
Well, you could use the bat to swat the rifle out of the... Why are we... No, this is not the answer.
No,
the
it answer really isn't.
It's not to be violent. How about a good fist fight?
Well, you know, just a mental challenge or
people
something.
People don't do that enough anymore. It's only on TV. Good fist fight.
Here's a good letter, but it's a long letter. But I'm going to read the whole thing. Hopefully my voice will stay. But I'm going to give a nice cough now.
To a good fist fight because...
Do some talking while I cough so I get my throat all clear.
Okay.
And the folks won't hear it.
Well, I'm just saying, if people have guns and they're armed and they have knives and all this stuff, you can't get to a good fist fight, Got some grappling, some good holds. You left it on?
I left it on. I'm just, oh boy, that must sound awful.
There's nothing like a good fist fight.
And wait, it's delay. It's too late for delay.
That people, with weapons kind of deter the whole fist fight. I mean, what happened to that? Is that lost? I'm not saying fighting is a good way to resolve issues. But,
can you believe my throat's not clear after all
it
that?
It just seems too easy. Do you need a cough drop?
Do you have a cough drop? You've had a cough drop this whole time? Of course I want a cough drop.
Well, I installed one.
Do you have a bottle of water, too? Nice, refreshing beverages?
I have my last one. Oh, no, wait, here.
All right.
There you go.
You have the cough drop, and then I'll read this letter. All right. Wait, hold on.
Get it started.
Put that in the background.
Get it started. Yeah.
I just started listening to your two shows via podcast last week, and yes, you can listen to us via podcast, www.2600.com/offthewall. I just started listening to your two shows via podcast last week, but going back 2 months, I really enjoy the information and views you have presented and thought you might like my view as a sort of rebuttal. As a quote-unquote gun nut, we don't call them gun nuts, it's nasty, and plus it gets them angry.
A wacko.
We don't call them that either. Oh, my God, you're asking for it. As a gun nut, and they put that in quotes, I would like to submit my views on gun control for your consideration. These are only my views and opinions. I cannot speak for anyone else, nor do I want to. I agree that gun violence has gotten out of control in this country. Just about any psychopath slash unstable person can get a firearm, and that terrifies me. I've had a concealed firearms license in the state of Indiana for 9 years, and I carry my firearm everywhere where I am legally allowed. I live in a bad part of Indianapolis. In August 2010, a man drove up to a party, pulled a rifle from his car, and shot 8 people, killed 2 of them, injured 6 others, 4 blocks from my home. In June 2010, a man knocked on my neighbor's door, and shot her, and he had the wrong house. Now you ask, why don't I move? I'm trying to. My home has been on the market for 3 years, and the price has been reduced $30,000. I've been approached many times while just trying to mow my grass, walk my dogs, and drive my car. Each time, I don't know what to expect from the other person. Maybe they want to compliment my lawn care or borrow money or worse. Having the ability to defend myself if needed is a great comfort. I've never had to draw my firearm in defense and never want to be in that situation. Well, let me just break in here for a moment. If somebody approaches you, either you're going to draw your weapon right there so you have the advantage, or they're going to have the advantage when they draw their weapon. You know, it doesn't work like in the cowboy films where you can be quick on the draw and somehow shoot the gun out of their hands. It doesn't really tend to work that way.
Or like in the movies where you negotiate, oh, no, let me just get my wallet. No, yeah. It's in here. It's in here.
I know it's over there.
And then you pull it out.
Yeah. Or you tap him on his other shoulder and he turns around and then you grab the gun out of his hand.
Whoop, whoop, whoop.
Doesn't work. Yeah. Really doesn't work. It does put you in a mindset, and sometimes when you're in warfare, I guess you have to be in that mindset. You really shouldn't be in warfare in the town that you live in. Bigger problem is this bad part of Indianapolis. That's got to be fixed, and it won't be fixed by people just arming themselves more and more, because nobody's going to back down, and it's just going to get to be more of a war zone. You see it all the time. You see things progress. They don't go backwards. You see the metal detectors being installed in schools, because guns are so easy to obtain that kids started bringing them to school and started getting angry and shooting other kids. So the metal detectors were put in inside schools. I don't see that turning around. I don't see them being taken out. I don't see people backing down and saying, okay, let's be more reasonable. No, it just keeps getting more and more unreasonable. It's a one-way street.
And it gets worse because you're supposed to be able to talk to the people in charge, the people that sort of make some of the decisions that would clean up Indianapolis. I don't think Obama's going to speak about Indianapolis tonight and clean it up per se, but there's going to be people there that could probably do something about it as representatives from that area.
Absolutely.
And then, you know, we can't really talk to them anymore. You can't go visit them in their office, and you can't go see them in front of a store. And you can't send them anything in the mail because it might have anthrax. And, you know, an email, well, it could be spam or it could be filtered out. It could never get to them. And then maybe, you know, phone calls will be banned. You know, your voice could be...
who knows? The level of paranoia just... it's contagious. Anyway, let's continue with this letter. In regards to banning assault rifles and high-capacity magazines, I would support it if the law would actually do something about them. For a point of reference, I do own a Kalashnikov model... 1947, commonly known as, Kyle?
AK-47.
Why do you know that so quickly?
A Kalashnikov.
It just bothers me that you know, what's the capital of North Dakota? See? There's a big question mark above your head right now. You North know what a Kalashnikov model 1947 is called, but you don't know the capital of North Dakota. And
North
honestly,
Dakota,
I don't...
It's
I don't really...
Billings.
I think it's Brisbane.
Billings,
no, wait,
Montana.
That's... No, Billings, Montana is not the capital of North Dakota, I don't think. I'm pretty sure that's not the case.
Africa.
Yeah. Okay, Sarah. All right. Let's continue with this. Try to get through it. I have an AK-47. I also have 2 30-round magazines for the rifle. Do I have any justifiable use for a rifle capable of firing 600 rounds per minute at a range of 440 yards? No. Let's just relish that no for a moment. What do I do with it? I shoot targets at a local indoor range. Why do I have it? A friend needed money and was willing to part with it. If the same assault weapons ban of 1994 is reenacted tomorrow, the only effect of my life would be to turn my rifle into an investment. I paid $600 when I purchased it, and during the ban, prices reached nearly $1,500. A local store was selling the 30-round magazines for $100 each. I paid $18 each for mine. The ban of 1994 didn't stop sales or remove any guns or magazines from the country. It just stopped the importation, manufacture, and sale of new ones. And once the ban was lifted in 2004, sales went through the roof. Well, it sounds to me like we're saying here that the ban didn't go far enough, and I agree with that completely, that these kinds of things should not be in the hands of people in their homes. Yeah, if you feel you need an AK-47 to do target practice, go crazy. Go to one of those places where that kind of thing is encouraged, but that should not be in your home. There's no reason in the world for that. And I don't think that's being big brother to say this kind of thing can hurt or kill your kids or neighbors or yourself if you get in a bad mood or something like that. So, yeah, I think that those bans need to go a lot further. And that's got nothing to do with banning guns. That's not what that is at all.
Yeah, I mean, it was probably too little too late and not and hasty. You know, it needs to be a culture shift. It needs to be us deciding what we decide as a nation we want for ourselves. I mean, yeah, okay, we have the Second Amendment. Let's be responsible. Let's do something cool with it that is productive and raises the kind of people that we want to succeed us, you know, in the future.
Now, let's continue here. Once the ban was lifted in 2004, sales went through the roof. For a comparison, does a resident of Manhattan, New York, need a 2010 Dodge Viper with 600 horsepower and a top speed of 200 miles per hour?
No.
In a heavily congested area with a 30 mile per hour speed limit? No. Does that mean the government should ban them? Very interesting question. Very good question. Well, you know, here's the thing. Dodge Vipers or SUVs, big vehicles, they're expensive.
And you have to have parking?
You have to have parking.
You got to get emissions?
You got to pay for all kinds of things.
Inspection?
You got to buy the thing in the first place.
Fuel?
Now, if you were to get a fleet of 500 of these things, 500 of these things, and you were expecting to park them in your neighborhood, I think your neighbors would have something to say about that. It would be a big inconvenience to them. It would impact their life in a negative way. Yeah, you have the right to buy as many SUVs as you want, but after a while, it starts getting in the way of other things.
Insurance?
You're going to be paying through the nose for that right because it does get a little crazy and unreasonable. And maybe you have to have a fleet of drivers or something watching over this. But you can't just go out and do it yourself. Yeah, you can technically you can buy 1,000 SUVs, but you have to have the money for that. You have to have some plan on what to do with them. And as far as driving them, yeah, you can drive them, but you got to drive them safely, and you can't go nuts with them. And if you do go nuts with them, it's not the same thing as having a machine gun that can mow down people a lot faster than an SUV can.
I like that idea, insurance policy. How come you don't take out an insurance policy? You know, you take one out with your car just in case you involuntarily manslaughter someone. Why don't you have that kind of thing with a weapon? You know, some sort of insurance policy that is basically the wacko policy, just in case a screw goes loose and you decide to take them out. You know, that's practical. These are the kinds of ideas. I know I'll get lambasted. You know, that's a terrible thing. You know, we can't, you know, insurance for guns. But, I mean, I don't understand why that industry hasn't come up with that.
Our phone number is 631-632-9872, 631-632-WUSB. Let's finish this letter. As for the no guns allowed signs, I don't know the laws in Washington State, where Kyle is from, but in Indiana, they hold no legal value. I can walk right past the sign into the business it protects, quote unquote, and if the owner should notice my firearm, they can ask me to leave, and I will. As long as I behave and leave when asked, there are no charges that can be leveled against me, and once I leave, I won't return. The store owner gets to express his desire for a gun-free environment, and I get to express my desire to exercise my Second Amendment rights. Also, the person looking to rob the store doesn't care about the sign, the owner's desire for a gun-free zone, or the safety of anyone in his or her way. But again, you know, if we define ourselves by what criminals will get away with, then we can say, well, why can't we speed in the streets? Because criminals are going to speed in the street. It doesn't make any difference. We'll do it too. You know, why have these laws? Because only criminals will break them. How do my family and friends feel about me carrying a firearm? My wife doesn't like it. She has made that very clear, even though one of the reasons I carry is to defend her along with myself. Well, you should take a good look at someone not feeling like you're defending them and feeling like maybe it's putting you in more of a risky position. Those are valid feelings, and they should be respected.
Maybe they're afraid of you, and they're afraid to tell you they're afraid of you.
That's also unfortunate and possible, definitely. So anyway, what do? I don't carry around her. Okay, well, that's fair. That's considerate. Her sister, on the other hand, has made it clear she feels safer when I am around and carrying. She has equated the feeling to having a police officer or security with her. I think that's where we differ, because I don't feel safer standing next to a cop or a security guard. You know, they go nuts too sometimes. Any human does. My parents don't own guns. I never held a gun until I moved out of their house. How do they feel about them? They don't quite see the point of me carrying, but support my decision and allow me to carry in their home. I have taken my father to the shooting range. He even shot the AK-47. He had a wonderful time. Now my mother wants to go. That's great. That's fine. I went to a shooting range myself, and all it did, I mean, it was fun to do, but it underlined my feelings, my strong caution about carrying this kind of thing in your pocket or in your home. I saw the destruction. I saw the immense firepower, and I could not imagine why anybody would want to have that around them all the time unless there was really something they had to prove.
I want to take issue with one thing he said about a bar. I was talking about a bar the other week, and he said he doesn't know what the laws are, and he brought up a burglar who would come into a bar. And
The other reader brought that up.
A listener. They say that, but, you know, there's consequences for your actions. And if you're going to stick up a bar, do you know how quickly the Seattle police will be on you?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they're a full bar. Do you know how many cell phones are in there?
And cameras. There's cameras everywhere.
Yeah. In fact, several of the bars in Georgetown have cameras, you know, so there's consequences. People are going to recognize you. You don't stick up a bunch of people eating pizza. They're going to be, you know, tweeting about it in 3 seconds.
But you do get into arguments about football and about how the Jets really blew it yesterday. And sometimes people get really upset, especially if they've had a few, and they might try and test you out a little bit. And one thing leads to another, especially if you've had a few, and we've just seen it so many times before. Okay, let's get through this because we do have some phone calls. Do I wish there was no need for me to carry and own a firearm? Of course. The thought that I might be shot on any given day is terrifying. The idea that I might one day have to shoot my firearm in defense of myself, family, or the human was a big decision I had to make. And it's good that people see that it's a bad thing. And I, even gun advocates see it's a bad thing. So we can agree that it's a problem that does need to be dealt with. What do I carry or own? I prefer to carry my .40 caliber Beretta with a 15-round magazine. I like the .40 caliber because it fits my hands and has the stopping power that would prevent the need for multiple shots. However, it is a large handgun, so during the summer, I usually carry a small .25 caliber Beretta that can slip in a pocket undetected. I also own a shotgun for home defense. I cannot begin to count the number of times something went bump in the night, requiring me to search the home so my wife and I can sleep again. You know, I've lived a while on this planet, and I've been scared by all kinds of things in the night, but I've never felt the need to go down with a gun to check it out. And I think if you have that mentality, you're in combat mode, and you got to look at why you're in combat mode, where you're living, and I just think something isn't right when that's the default reaction. In Indiana, there are no class or training requirements for a firearms license. All that is required is a clean background check, free of felonies or mental disorders. I would fully support any change that would require training before issuing a license. Thank you. The fact that it is easier to get a firearms license than a driver's license is scary. And as for people carrying guns being a cause of crime, I recommend you look at the crime rates of Chicago and New Hampshire. New Hampshire has no gun control laws that I am aware of. The state doesn't issue gun licenses because they don't require them. Every citizen is allowed to carry a firearm without a background check, application, or even phone call to the local police. Chicago, on the other hand, bans all handguns. Illinois residents that would like to own a gun in their home but not carry it anywhere have to apply for a permit, hope they get approved. However, even the state permit doesn't allow a person to own a handgun legally in Chicago. How do their crime rates compare? They aren't similar cultures like England and the U.S., as you mentioned. They are the same culture. Well, interesting point of view there, but there's one flaw with this argument. Chicago and New Hampshire, one's a city, one's a state. One's the country, one's urban. That's very different culturally. If you want to compare Chicago to another city, maybe, say, Detroit, I don't know what the laws in Detroit are with guns. I don't think they ban handguns like Chicago does. I think you'll find that the murder rate, the violence rate in Detroit is a lot higher. I mean, you can twist these things in all different ways, but let's compare cities to cities and rural areas to other ones. In summary, I view my guns in much the same way you might view your computer backups, firewall, and encryption. Neither of us wants to need any of it, but if we do need it, we have it. Signed, Jess. Thanks, Jess, for writing all that and interesting points. I'd like to give our listeners a chance, though, because they've been calling patiently while we've been listening to me talk. So let's go over here and take a phone call. And good evening. You're on Off the Hook. I'm sorry, Off the Wall.
Oh.
Sorry, wrong show.
It's okay. Hi. My name is Rose, and I love your show. I'm not going to say, you know, I'm not going to waste your time telling you how great you are, but I'm usually jogging when I listen. I listen with my old-fashioned headpiece with the radio and all that.
Uh-huh.
I got a chance to call today. So I just want to say that what if we, now I don't know how we would go about this as far as guns, But what if we divided the country and the people that want guns can stay on one side? Like, we could take the East Coast, uh-huh. we could take the West Coast, however you want to do it. And once you decide which side is going to have the guns, then they just go there.
Well, I mean, you say that in jest, but I think there are a lot of differences between people in this country. And I think it would be a better place if we weren't just so big and trying to be so homogenous. I don't like the whole idea of melting pots. I like individual cultures. And I think the Northeast is very different from the Southwest. And I think if we're not going to become different countries, we should at least become very different, both in language and custom and lifestyles and things like that. Because what we do here in New York, I know that doesn't work in Arizona. I know people there want to do things a different way. That's fine. But they shouldn't impose their lifestyle here any more than we should impose our lifestyle there.
I hear you. I don't like really the thought of a commune or, you know, and sometimes I used to think that that's where I have to go if I really want to, you know, live the way I want to live. But I don't know. It's upsetting. I don't get it. I don't get the whole. It had to have started in childhood with, the, you know, like the way we are, the way they are, the way the people who want guns don't want guns. Like you said, I've searched my house, you know, thought somebody was coming in the window one time, but would I want a gun and do it? No, you know?
Thank you. Hey, thanks for your call. And I know we've tried it in the past, but I think maybe North and South would work just fine in this case.
Yeah, okay, thank you. I love winter, too.
All right, thanks. You say that because you want to be in the cool part of the country with us, right?
I've always been in the cool part of the country.
Seattle, New York, same country? I don't think so. No, I'm for dividing it up by former phone companies. 9X will be 9X. You can be, what was it, Pacific Telesis? Was that what you were? U.S. West. You're U.S. West.
That's Pacific it. Northwest Bell.
Okay. That wasn't one of the companies, though, that came out of the breakup.
All right, Quest.
All right, good evening. You're on Off the Wall.
Good evening, Emmanuel. This is Bobson from Bulgaria.
Yeah, you know, it's amazing how we always get the call from Bulgaria. And it's always the last call, too, because I think we're out of time. So you have about a minute.
Well, I don't know if always, but yeah, sometimes it's weird. You know what's weird from the news today?
What's that?
The fact that the person who was arrested in the member of parliament, the congressperson shooting, entered the plea of not guilty, which sounds kind of weird to me. I mean,
yeah. No, I mean, well, that's what people do here. They basically don't want to take any responsibility for their actions, no matter how crazy or.
My understanding is he said nothing, and the jury accepted his saying nothing as a plea of not guilty.
Is there? I don't think there's a jury yet. I don't think there's even a trial yet. He just entered a plea, and now there's going to be a trial. It'll be another circus. Listen, it's what time is it over there in Bulgaria right now?
It's nearly 2 a.m. on the Wednesday.
Okay, so all you have to do is stay up until 4 a.m. and you can watch Obama's State of the Union address and see what he says and let us know next week.
Is it in 2 hours from
now? It's in
2 hours,
so 4 a.m. No big deal. You can watch the sun come up with his speech. But we're out of time, unfortunately. Great talking to you again, and hope we see you this summer at the hacker event in Germany.
Okay, have fun.
All right, take care.
Hey, E.
Yes?
How do you feel? Is this going to drive you nuts if I bring up lasers?
It probably would at this point. It's going to drive Finn nuts because we're going to go into his time if we don't leave right now.
Well, good show. Good speaking with you. And
as always.
Good night, everyone.
Yes. Have a good night. Stay safe. Write to us, otw@2600.com. And we'll see you next time.
If you walk through the garden, you better watch your back. Well, I beg your pardon for the standing there of sight. If you walk with Jesus, he'll save your soul. You gotta keep the devil down in the hole. He's got the fire and the fury at his command. You don't have to worry if you hold on to Jesus' hand. We'll all be saved from Satan when the thunder rolls. You gotta keep the devil. Jesus' mighty soul. And they seal you with their wing. Keep your cross to the Lord. Don't pay heed to temptation. Or your hands are so cold. You gotta keep the devil.
We'll be right back. flame of flaming lips category. And what you'll be listening to is a demo tape of a song that we just sort of got together and made up. And it's a true story about how my brother, who is a firm believer of hard narcotics, one day went to the grocery store at about 11 o'clock in the morning under the influence of several of his favorite downers at the time, and went in to buy some something, and he couldn't figure out actually how to do it, and ended up being hassled by the man at the grocery store, and consequently being they tried to arrest him, but they couldn't figure out what was wrong with him
because he couldn't talk or walk,
and they ended up taking him to the hospital, and he was treated for some kind of overdose or something. And this is our interpretation of his incident, but we sort of add in there that we figure maybe he has kind of a Willard complex, you know, the Willard guy who could call up the rats whenever he was in trouble. But we figure my brother has sort of the Willard complex, but he, instead of using rats, he uses the insects that are around, and in the song, it's the water bugs. There's probably a lot of them around his house. And he calls up the water bugs to attack the people who are giving him a hard time. And according to this song, it's usually the authoritative figures, as in the police officers. And it's just sort of one day in his life. And this is how it goes.
Water bug, take five.
Take five.
Let's be official here. One, two, three.